Hello everyone, this is Theistic Media Studios. All good things come to an end, and so tonight is our last broadcast with Shripad Bhakti Vidyan Mahayogi Maharaj. All of the Chiang Mai devotees are already missing him since he really sweetened, since his sweet presence really brightened our lives. Maharaj, you wanted to start with some quote?
Yeah, I thought I'd read a little bit from Shri Guru and His Grace. I was having a discussion with one of our devotees here in Chiang Mai today, and the story of Aurobindo Ghosh came up, and so I took a look at Shri Guru and His Grace and found that story, but it's difficult to just read the story. You have to see the context a bit. So here goes. This is from Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj, slaves of the truth. We are slaves of the truth. We are beggars for the pure current of truth that is constantly flowing, the fresh current. We are not charmed by any formality. I will bow down my head wherever I find the river of nectar coming down to me. When one is conscious that the absolute truth is descending to him from the highest domain, he will think, I must surrender myself here. Mahaprabhu says to Ramananda Roy, Kiba vipra kibanyasi shudra keni noi, jay krishna tatmaveta shay guru hoy. Wherever the truth appears, wherever the nectar of divine ecstasy descends, I shall offer myself as a slave. That is my direct concern. Whatever form it takes, it doesn't matter much. The form has some value. But if there is any conflict, the inner spirit of a thing should be given immense value over its external cover. Otherwise, if the spirit has gone away and the bodily connection gets the upper hand, our so-called spiritual life becomes sahaja, cheap imitation. When we're conscious of the real substance of Krishna consciousness, the real wealth we're receiving from our spiritual master, then our spiritual life cannot be sahajism or imitationism. We must be aware enough to detect our guru's advice even when we find it in another. One who is awake will see, here is my guru's advice. I find it here in this man. Somehow or other, it has come here. How? I do not know, but I see my guru's characteristics, his dealings, and behavior in this person. When we are able to recognize a thing for its intrinsic value, then wherever we find it, we cannot neglect it. There's an example of this in an instance regarding Aurobindo Ghosh of Pondicherry. He was the first leader of the anarchist party and practically the founder of the revolutionary movement in Bengal. In 1928, a case against him was proceeding in Calcutta High Court. A famous attorney, Mr. Norton, was in charge of the prosecution. Aurobindo had absconded, and when the case was going on, he was not to be found anywhere. Mr. Norton was concerned how to find him. Aurobindo's English was very good English. He had been educated in England from childhood and could speak English even better than many Englishmen. Norton had begun to search through different papers and magazines for Aurobindo's writing. Finally, he found Aurobindo's style of writing in the Amrita Bazar Patrika, which was a Bengali newspaper. Here is Mr. Ghosh, he said. The editor of the paper was summoned to court to find out whether Ghosh had written the article. Norton examined him. This is your paper? You must know who has written this article. You are the editor. Yes, I know. Do you know this man, Aurobindo Ghosh? Yes, I know him. I consider him to be one of the greatest men in the world. As the editor of this newspaper, do you know who wrote this article? Yes, I know. Has Mr. Ghosh written this article? I won't say. Norton asked him, do you know what is the punishment? Yes, 6 months imprisonment. You are ready for that? Yes, I'm ready for that. Holding up the newspaper article, Norton said, "Here is Mr. Ghosh. I rest my case." So he saw Aurobindo Ghosh in his writing. In a similar way, we must see, "Here is my Gurudev." So this gets back to what one of the devotees was asking the other day. How do you know? How can you tell? I was discussing with Induleka, we were talking about Tarkovsky. So if somebody says he's a student of Tarkovsky, you look at the movie and you see, well, is Tarkovsky there? What are the similarities? When you know something, you can recognize it. You know, if you love the Beatles and you hear a Beatles song, you know, oh, that's the Beatles. If you hear an imitation, you know, well, it's not really them. So when you come in contact with the real thing, you can recognize it. That's what Guru Maharaj is saying here. And it doesn't matter what form it takes. It may even take a very unusual form. It may even be an ordinary person. The important thing is, how do we see the truth in spite of its particular form? So the other day someone asked me, well, you say this Avadhut Maharaj, you know, you get some light from him. How can you know that? You've never even met the man. I'm going to meet Avadhut Maharaj tomorrow. I'm very excited. And I had to say, I can look in the face of his devotees, and I'm getting so much light from them that I can see, I can tell, okay, the force is strong here, you know? As they say in Star Wars, there's the force and there's the dark side.
And they have cookies.
Huh? So the force is strong with him. I can sense that. I'm getting so much light from all of you that I know there's light there. And even though my guru is no longer physically present on this planet, all of you are instructing me. So I feel like I see my guru in you. If I couldn't see that, then I would be dead to his message and he would be dead to me. But he isn't. He lives in his message. He lives in the current of truth that he represents, and he lives in all of you, and you've brought that to me. So I have to take the dust from your lotus feet and consider it, my hat. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to read.
And we all want to get something from that divine stream. I'd like to continue with that we are trying to reach our audience with our broadcasts, and they are trying to reach us with their comments. So yesterday, Ranga Devi left a little message for you. When you advised us to see Guru Maharaj and not buy a house, you spoke like a young sannyasi warrior. Millions of palaces are only coffins to us without Sri Guru and his grace. By the way, when we got there, Guru Maharaj initiated us on the day when Sri Guru and his grace was presented to him. You contributed to the best decision in our lives. We are always remembering that, Shyamananda and Ranga Devi. Postscriptum. Sri Guru and his grace was completed that day and presented 2 weeks later by Bhakti Sudhir Goswami. That's the message.
I'm speechless. Thank you so much. That warms my heart and inspires me. You know, you have no idea how much. So I'm happy if I could play any role in helping you and giving you any spiritual light.
And since we have a last broadcast, let me try to fetch a bunch of questions.
Okay.
About everything. First is, so what are your main principles in life? Like some rules that you follow now or previously?
My main principles in life?
Do you have a rule or some thing that you're living day to day with?
Well, a really good rule was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastakam. And that was Trinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahishnuna, Manina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadakuri. That's the golden rule of Krishna consciousness. He says you should be humbler than a blade of grass, because the grass, you step on the grass and it doesn't complain. More tolerant than a tree. A tree gives you fruits, it gives you flowers. You can use the tree for shade and get shelter from the rain. And ultimately, you can cut the tree down and burn it as firewood. And the tree never complains. It's tolerant. So someone was telling me today, they were surprised that I was tolerant about something. And I said, well, you have no idea. I'm really not so tolerant. But I feel perhaps I've made a little progress as far as being humble and tolerant. As Ranga Devi was saying, you know, I had the mind and attitude of a sannyasi samurai. But it takes a lot of pride to do that. And over the years, perhaps I've mellowed and humbled, been a little bit more humble. But humility is difficult. That's why it says, if you can do that, if you can be humble, you can be tolerant, let others take the credit, you know, then you can always chant Hare Krishna. So I aspire to that.
That was one of the key shlokas of Govinda Maharaj, and also Avadhut Maharaj is living by this principle.
It's a very good principle.
Day to day.
Kirtaniya Sadahari.
Another thing is a question from devotees, that sometimes devotees fight with each other to get their guru's attention or to get some service. So have you ever fought with someone for this reason and obviously observed this?
Have I ever fought with someone to get attention? All the time. Since I was a baby, I had two brothers and a sister. So we fought for the attention of our mother, which is natural. Guru Maharaj was giving a lecture once and he was explaining that a brother or a sister is a natural enemy because they're fighting for the milk of the mother, for her attention, for her love. And also, Srila Prabhupada had something like 5,000 or 6,000 disciples by the time I came along. It was very difficult to get his recognition. Even Guru Maharaj at the time I was there, he didn't have that many followers, but sometimes you'd go upstairs and someone would say, no, you can't see Guru Maharaj today. He's talking with so-and-so. And be like, ooh, how's that possible? You know, I need attention from my guru. But, you know, I was telling somebody today, it's natural to be competitive and we live in the material world, which is the world of exploitation. So it's all about, I have something and you don't, and you have something and I want it, I'm going to take it from you. But spiritual life should not be like that. So it's not a good practice to try to fight with the other devotees for the attention of the guru. The guru is telling us, Trinadapi Sunichena, be humble, it will come to you. But if you think, well, I'm going to do this and that to get more attention. It doesn't really work out like that. It's a very dangerous path. So try to be humble.
One of the things you said the other day during our broadcast, you said that Sridhar Maharaj books are more spoken about than read. So obviously.
Yes, I did say that. Mm-hmm. That's a challenge. See, that's a little of the old Irish, you know, the old
yes, I took the challenge.
Samurai sannyasi.
I started reading one of the books, and it said that the loving search for last servant.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the just the beginning, it said that faith is the only mean through which we can see, hear, or feel the higher world. So obviously, I got a question. What's the difference between faith and imagination or dreaming? You know, like.
Well, that's a very good question. That's a very nice question. Well, imagination and dreams, it's interesting that you bring that up because it's something that fascinates me. Dreams in particular have been analyzed a lot, especially by Freud and Carl Jung. And Freud, he tends to think that dreams have to do with unfulfilled wishes. And when we dream, we're doing what he calls wish fulfillment. So you see a chocolate in the window of a store, and later you dream about eating that because you're fulfilling some wish that you couldn't in real life. Jung, actually, I think, is much deeper than Freud in that respect. And he talks about something called the collective unconsciousness, where he says that, for example, you have a dream about flying. I may also dream about flying. And in a sense, everyone dreams about that, right? Have you ever dreamed about flying?
They gave me a ticket.
Okay. So, and perhaps your dream might be a little different from mine or hers or his, but in essence, we all have that same kind of dream. So then you have something like mythology, where mythical beasts or creatures combine aspects of humans and flight, right? From Icarus and Daedalus to, in the Greek mythology, you know, to Garuda, right? But what Jung says is interesting. He says, really, in order for you to dream like that, in order for everyone to dream like that, there must exist some sort of collective unconsciousness, which is a reflection of reality. In other words, it's only possible to have that kind of dream if there's some underlying reality there, okay? So Sridhar Maharaj is saying, you know, Krishna is not imaginary. He's real. Not only is he not imaginary and not only is he real, but you have everything that it takes to come in contact with that reality. You only have to turn it on. And just like a radio signal, you can detect where it is, and you can find it more stronger here. You come close to a devotee, a Vaishnava, and he's got a powerful radio where he's listening to that signal. He's tuning in on that. Or if you like, Wi-Fi, you know. There's this powerful signal coming from the spiritual world, and you, as a soul, as a particle of consciousness, can automatically tune into that. It's hidden from us. It's a little subterranean. It may come out in a crooked or perverse form, in the form of a dream. But the real difference between the dream and faith is that once you come in contact with that signal constantly and over a period of time, it becomes a very recognizable experience of transcendental reality. And at that point, it's concrete enough so that you can understand this is not a dream. My wish fulfillment about eating chocolate or something has nothing to do with this. This is real. So what's imaginary and what's real is another important topic for Sridhar Maharaj, and he deals with the distinction between reality and imagination and subjective evolution of consciousness, where he says that reality is spiritual. This is not really real. It's the conscious soul playing with a perverse dreamlike state. And so Maya, in a sense, is a dreamlike state. And reality has nothing to do with it. It's more like faith. It's like that signal that if you hone in on, you can find it. I don't know. That's
good. I also thought, why are we not reading books? But then I understood it's just a fact we don't sometimes read them. So our talks is some kind can be like a the things that we need from them right now. So one of the questions from devotees was, what are the metaphors or the things Sridhar Maharaj said to really prove that consciousness is above the matter?
Oh, well, again and again, he would, very simply put, he would say, is it easier to believe that the stone creates the soul or that the soul creates the stone? You know, can a rock, okay, or in other words, according to the scientists, you start out with dull energy, matter, chemicals. And out of those chemicals, there's some kind of organization, and then some hazy form of consciousness, and then that hazy form of consciousness develops physical characteristics and a body, and then from primordial soup, we become amoebas, you know, and after that, one-celled animal, the whole panoply of Darwinian evolution from sea life, fish, amphibians, lizards, crocodiles, mammals, primates, human beings. But it's very difficult to think that out of death, you know, life will suddenly organize itself. It's easier to believe that consciousness already exists and consciousness organizes itself in material forms. That was his basic, one of his important metaphors.
And the other question is, I think, very related and connected to the to Srila Guru Maharaj's principle of love and separation. And so, why is it reasonable? Because you're leaving soon.
Oh.
And so maybe you could go deeper on this principle that you're meeting some important person and then, you know, you'll be disconnected with them. Like usually it said, make some service, but what's deeper meaning of that?
Well, the deeper meaning is, I don't really like to discuss these questions because I don't feel entirely comfortable publishing this level of discussion. Actually, Goswami Maharaj is far more experienced in doing that. But basically, union and separation is about Parakiya Bhav. The idea of Parakiya Bhav is that basically, something is juicier or sweeter or more delicious if it doesn't really belong to us. So if the residents of Vrindavan put a bowl of yogurt in the window for Krishna, thinking, well, Krishna likes yogurt, you know, he can come by if he likes. He doesn't have to break into the house and find a pot hidden in a dark, cool place, break the pots of yogurt and steal the yogurt. We'll put it out there for him. That yogurt is not as delicious for Krishna as the stolen yogurt. If you see there's some cookies in the kitchen and you steal a few cookies and offer them to your friend, those cookies are more delicious than the officially sanctioned cookies, something like that. So when something doesn't belong to you, it can be taken away, and that makes it more precious. So this Chiang Mai experience doesn't belong to me. It's not mine. I can't have it. I can't keep it. I can't put it in my suitcase and carry it back to Mexico with me. I have to leave it behind when I go. So that makes every moment more precious. Our broadcast tonight to devotees all over the world is a chance for me to connect with people I haven't heard from or seen in years and years. And the idea that I can communicate with them is entirely precious to me. But the idea that I can only do this for another 10 or 15 minutes and then I'll disappear from the screen and they will disappear from my life is incredibly painful. and that makes the experience more delicious. So when Krishna in Dwarka, in his Dwarka pastimes, is married with Rukmini. So this is a standard marriage. He owns Rukmini in the traditional Hindu concept of being married to someone. It's ownership. That's called svabhav. It means it's mine. So if something is mine, it's not as interesting. Radharani and Krishna are not married. So their relationship has to do with the fact that there's no ownership going on. And as a consequence, when they're together, they know this is very soon to be finished. So there's union and separation. Separation is when the two are no longer together. That's why when we chant Hare Krishna, we're remembering the union of Radha and Krishna and their separation by vibrating the name of Radha, Hare, and the name of Krishna, Krishna. So we're remembering how both aspects of the divine absolute, the power principle and the pleasure principle, the Krishna principle and the Radha Krishna, the Radha principle, they're coming together and separating. So union and separation actually will be one of the themes of our upcoming publication from Guardian of Devotion Press. And so you can look for it when Goswami Maharaj comes back in Thailand.
You hit two rabbits with that answer.
Меня нравится?
Yes.
Yeah.
Положительно.
Okay.
And one of the our main practices is chanting Maha Mantra. Uh-huh. So I'd like to ask a couple questions about that. First days when I was like just getting acknowledged with all the mantras, there was first no explanation or translation of Maha Mantra, but Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and Sridhar Maharaj, they gave their specific explanations of the meaning of this Maha Mantra. Sridhar Maharaj said something like, oh, please give me service, and directing this prayer to the divine couple. Can you tell about Maha Mantra?
Well, I can read to you a little bit from the Golden Volcano of Divine Love, right? There's a chapter in here. Hmm? Yes, it's called The Holy Name of Krishna. Yeah? And so this is very nice instruction for anyone who's practicing the Harinam mantra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not leave us with many of his writings. The only really known composition is the Shikshastikam, which is 8 verses in Sanskrit talking about the holy name. So he says, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvapanam, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam, Vidya Vadu Jivanam, Anandam Budhi Vardanam, Pratiparam, Purnamritas Vardanam, Saravatma Snapanam Param, Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So actually the translation here, I put this translation, I'll read it. It says, the holy name of Krishna cleanses the mirror of the heart, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, extinguishes the fire of misery in the forest of birth and death. As the evening lotus blooms in the moon's cooling rays, the heart begins to blossom in the nectar of the name. And at last, the soul awakens to its real inner treasure, a life of love with Krishna. Again and again, tasting nectar, the soul dives and surfaces in the ever-increasing ocean of ecstatic joy. All phases of the self, of which we may conceive, are fully satisfied and purified, and at last conquered by the all-auspicious influence of the holy name of Krishna. So he described this verse by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives different levels of what happens when one chants Hare Krishna. What are the different stages through which we will pass when chanting the holy name? The first stage, it cleanses the mirror of the mind. So we were talking about imagination and dreams and faith and how to know the difference. Well, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam means that our reflective power, our capacity for understanding the difference between reality and illusion, will become sharpened. That mirror, the reflecting power, will become more acute by chanting the holy name of Krishna until the point where it begins to reflect the supreme reality. So the first effect of Sri Krishna Sankirtan is the cleansing of the mind. He says, what are the different kinds? If the mirror of the mental system is covered with dust, we cannot see things clearly, and scriptural advice cannot be properly reflected there. So this means don't try to read The Loving Search for the Lost Servant or these very difficult books until you've developed a little bit of adhikar, until the mind has been purified somewhat. Otherwise, a lot of these things won't make a lot of sense. What are the different kinds of dust covering the mirror of the mind? Our infinite, fleeting, and organized desires are considered dust. That's really good. Infinite, fleeting, and organized desires. And our hearts and minds are covered with layers and layers of this dust. So the first thing is cleanse the mind, a little brainwashing, Hare Krishna brainwashing. Wow. And then with the next step, you gradually become liberated from the threefold miseries of this material world. Then Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitarinam. The holy name bestows upon us the supreme goal of life. Having done away with negative engagements, our positive engagement begins and ultimately takes us to reality, the real truth, which is eternal, auspicious, and beautiful. We achieve the supreme goal, the greatest good, from chanting the holy name of Krishna. If we analyze this, we find the holy name takes us to an intimate personal relationship with Krishna, which includes neutrality, servitude, friendship, and filial affection. Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaram, covers the grace of Nityananda Prabhu, for it is by his grace that we may be allowed to worship Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. The next stage is Vidyavadu Jivanam. The holy name prepares us for the wholesale surrender to Krishna that is found in conjugal love, where the devotees surrender themselves infinitely at the disposal of Krishna. So we don't really have time to go through the whole Shikshastakam in 20 minutes. But yeah, you know, in the sanctity of the temple or in the privacy of your own home, take a few minutes and read the Shikshastakam by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the commentary by Sridhar Maharaj in the Golden Volcano of Divine Love, and see if you don't get a better understanding.
This diminishes my next question, so but we'll move on. Talking about the consciousness, one more question related to this. Mm-hmm. The scriptures say that the abodes, like Vrindavana, are not more the physical place, but the state of consciousness. And also we know that Vrindavana is in India.
Well, just stop right there. See, you're saying it's not a physical place, but it's a state of consciousness. But see, Guru Maharaj, what he's saying is consciousness is reality, right? So to draw a distinction between physical reality and consciousness, it gets tricky. I'm sorry, I cut you off, though.
I
keep doing that.
There is Vrindavan, there is Govardhan, and also there is Gupta Govardhan.
Uh-huh.
Like couple in our missions. So how does it come? How does it, like, what is this state of consciousness?
Well,
of these places.
For example,
on the earth.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated that the Ganges was the Jamuna, and that Navadvip Dham reveals Vrindavan. So if you go to Navadvip Dham, you won't see Vrindavan, but it's there. If we consider that Krishna's pastimes are infinite, we're talking about the Supreme Absolute Truth playing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. But where is the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj? Is that a finite place? Is that an infinite place? Can it exist in infinite universes, or can it only exist in Uttar Pradesh?
Well, according to scriptures, it's a finite place of around 12 square miles, something like this. But it's infinite and everything is there.
Well, then the other question is, you know, the earthly Vrindavan versus the Goloka Vrindavan. And, you know, some favor is given to the Vrindavan in Uttar Pradesh, so. It's a special place, no doubt about that. That's as far as I can go.
Okay, so talking about going somewhere, what are your plans for the near and the following futures? Meeting with Avadhut Maharaj can bring you anywhere.
Wow. Well, it brought me here. Just a slight contact with the Tatastha Shakti of Avadhut Maharaj brought me here. So I don't doubt what you're saying. As far as plans go, my plan is to try to do some service for Goswami Maharaj and help in bringing together the materials for a new book by Sridhar Maharaj, or perhaps a couple of them. And I like working in the area of writing and publication. So I understand that Avadhut Maharaj may also have something for me, but that is not defined as yet. So we'll see what the future brings.
For a more practical question, as far as it can go, you're going to leave Thailand and Theistic Media Studios will probably but now you laugh.
I'm only joking, but in a few minutes you'll see me really cry.
Yeah,
you don't want to make a grown man cry, you know. It's not a happy sight, so I'm making light, but it's actually tragedy.
No, we're going to more happy but still serious part.
I interrupt you again.
Yeah, okay. this will end soon. So Goswami Maharaj and you are always say, read the books of Sridhar Maharaj. There are all the answers for all of your questions. Still we don't. We try to come to get something from them to these broadcasts. So how do you think we can solve this controversial inside of us?
Oh.
We know, but we don't do.
Well, I have a suggestion. I don't know if it's practical, but, you know, as a practical suggestion, an audiobook. Do they exist? Have they done that?
Yes. On the Hare Krishna.ru, we have all the many audiobooks in Russian,
okay.
At least.
Well, then you could try listening to it. And that's not out of the question, because audiobooks are great. You can, while you're doing something else, you know, repairing your car or working on your computer, you can listen to the audiobook, and after two or three times through, you'll start getting something.
how do you think, like, what's the proper thing to deliver, like, the idea of Sridhar Maharaj to people? Because Saraswati Thakur, he was printing books, and that was, like, the cutting edge. Everyone was mm-hmm. reading. Like, what do you think now? Because we know, like, this book, but we don't get it. Like, just audiobook books, sometimes we don't have so much attention.
Well,
what's the best advertising or, like, the delivery method?
The best delivery method? For me, it's shravanam. It's hearing, listening. And reading is a passive communicative skill that's very similar to listening, only you're doing it by interpreting text. So for me, the text is primordial. It's hard to believe that text will disappear. And whether you're reading on a Nook, a Kindle, an e-reader, a computer screen, or if you're listening to an e-book, you can still get the text. But for me, the word is the important thing.
I don't know how to put this in a question, but do you have any good anecdotes about devotees in general or about anyone in particular?
I have some anecdotes.
Not about Russians.
It's hard for me to spontaneously come up with an anecdote. If we sit and talk about somebody for a while, a story will come out. But I can't just.
Then
nothing
I have
comes to my head, you know, at the moment.
Good question related to the theme we were talking just recently, the Trinada Pisunichana principle of Govinda Maharaj. It's known that only starting with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you could call somebody a
Okay, I'll give you an anecdote about Govinda Maharaj, all right, very quickly. Well, I'm a kind of a slow thinker. I'm not quick. That's another good difference between Goswami Maharaj and myself. I'm really slow. I take a long time to come around to something, but when I do, I may have some depth on it. One of my favorite anecdotes is about Govinda Maharaj. He used to like to eat muri, you know, and Srila Prabhupada, he was eating muri one day, or he asked for it, and Srila Prabhupada turned to him and he said, but this is only cheating the stomach. And I like that. This is cheating the stomach, because if you have a big bag of muri like that, it doesn't really turn into so much. But anyways, I'm not a great storyteller about devotee anecdotes, really.
So what I wanted to ask also is, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he called his disciples Prabhu, and usually this is used only to address the Lord. So he's telling that I see them as high as expansion of my guru, and I honor them so much. So have you ever experienced, or how does it implement this principle? Have you ever experienced this, like such an honor to somebody that you could really sincerely call him such a high thing?
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a realized devotee of Krishna on a very high level. You can't imitate him. I can't begin to enter his domain. The word Prabhu, if you translate it into Spanish, it's Señor. And if you translate Señor into English, it's Mr. And if you translate that into Russian, it's Gospodin. So the problem with a lot of devotee terminology is people throw these things around colloquially, and they become vulgarized and lose their original meaning. So it's a good idea to try to renovate the language as much as possible whenever you can. Like somebody told me the other day, would you like to go to downtown Chiang Mai? I said, yeah, I'd like to see what's going on here. And they said, okay, we'll dive deep into that tomorrow. And I thought, okay, I had never heard that used. Like, for me, to dive deep into reality has a special meaning, you know? But by repetition, some things tend to lose their meaning. So it's important to try to find the original meaning.
But Sridhar Maharaj said, by repetition, like we again and again read scriptures, and even if we don't understand, some cumulative effect come, and sometime lightning can hit us.
It's confirmed.
Okay. Then also, Lavanayana Mai Devidasi writing on our live stream channel.
Well, I'm very happy to hear from all these people. You know, I can't believe it.
Lavanya Mai. Thank you. And she said, Dandavats Maharaj from Lavanya Mai Devidasi in London. So great to have an afternoon class. It's 2 p.m. here. And all the wonderful memories.
Well, so wonderful that the folks at home are watching our Hare Krishna broadcast live here in Chiang Mai with Theistic Media Studios. So stay tuned to this channel because you'll see Goswami Maharaj, Avadhut Maharaj, and many other highly qualified devotees explaining fascinating aspects of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so up next is Avadhut Maharaj will be arriving from Russia. He's coming in tomorrow to Bangkok, Thailand, and I'm getting on an airplane tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock from Chiang Mai, and we hope to cross paths and discuss any future role I might be able to play helping him. So that's it?
Goswami Maharaj is in his New Year address. I think he opened many positions for aspiring servitors. So how do you think? What will be trendy in the coming time?
You want me to look into my crystal ball?
Yes.
Okay. And for me, for you, for the Chiang Mai folks? Who am I predicting the future for?
As the view from the little sides that you had on the our mission now.
Okay.
Do you think people can find something? Like once Avadhut Maharaj said in Lahton, his lecture, he said, like, usually devotees are treated to do like low class service or like peeling potatoes or like washing floors. But he said, I think in this mission, the most advanced people will come and do the most astonishing and outstanding projects. And everything that he say come to true. Is it the time?
So you're fishing for compliments.
All glories to Sri Guru and
okay. Well, I had a brilliant and fascinating experience here working with the devotees. At my suggestion, we went to try to film in a different place besides the studio because this format is a bit constraining. So I said, let's take it outside. We went to the jungle and we found some elephants and we filmed with the elephants. We went to the new land and we filmed there.
Nearly died.
Well, the elephants are strong. But when I talked to Goswami Maharaj, I explained, well, we had a few technical difficulties. It wasn't so easy. And he said, look at it like this. This is like a film school. What you're seeing is the beginning of something. This is not the end of something. We're just getting started. So if I were to take out my crystal ball and think about how this is going to break down in the future, I would say probably it's going to expand. And you will find that even the new property that you've just acquired will not be sufficient to house all the wonderful things that you're going to do there. you'll probably need to expand even more. I think your very young film crew are energetic, well-organized, disciplined, determined, excited about what they're doing, and are a very talented team of young people. And that's very inspiring for me. And if what we're doing with the elephants and shooting out in the bamboo is the beginning of something, I'm sure that the future will be so bright that you will need sunglasses.
And on Sunday market where we have sun kirtans, you can get also.
You can buy sunglasses in the Sunday market right here in Chiang Mai, Thailand. But while you're buying those sunglasses, don't forget to chant Hare Krishna with a happy Harinam party.
Right after reading this chapter.
What do you call that? Street Joy? Is that it? Mm-hmm. Check out Street Joy at guptagovardhan.com. See the photos.
Some more questions coming from our viewers. Let me put it this way. You're facing a time of change. And this is quite a popular topic in modern, like, people, wise people talking one to another. So when you have obstacles in life or life changes drastically, what helps you to carry on? What's your advice for the hard times?
Well, of course, the French, they say, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. It means the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's true there's change, but the material world is still the world of exploitation. It was Henry David Thoreau. He had a good comment. He said, read not the times, read the eternities. He spoke of how they were laying a cable, a transatlantic cable between the United States and England so that they could receive telegraph transmissions. And he said, now we have international communication, but what's the result? We will hear that Princess Edwina has the whooping cough. So now we have Facebook, Twitter, Skype, email, all these different instant methods of communication, but what's the message? So even though we're facing change, the constant thing is what's eternal. So look into that. Read the eternities. Read not the times. Read the golden volcano of divine love.
I've heard that Chinese, they have this like a kind of a curse, let you live in the time of change.
May you live in interesting times, is what I heard. But you're living closer to China, so you would know.
We have two Chinese devotees.
Oh yeah? Have you heard that?
I'm
old Chinese saying. May you live in interesting times. No.
Let it be the.
Also, constant change is hard to deal with because, say, you equip your studio with state of the art production quality technology, and then suddenly you find out tomorrow that, oops, this is all antiquated. It's all gone the way of, you know, high button shoes and buggy whips.
Now we're making vintage translations, broadcasts. Mm-hmm. Let it be the one of our last questions. About the great flashback you can have right now in your life and all the years you were practicing and living. Do you feel any changes in your heart since those days when you began practicing Krishna consciousness?
Well, you know, they say love is lovelier the second time around. So I don't feel change in the sense of my faith changing. My faith has always been there. It's been challenged, but it's always been there. what gives me heart is to look around the room and the folks at home and find new inspiration from them and see that the same thing is continuing, but only deeper. So love is lovelier the second time around.
What do you mean this for young aspiring devotees? By this?
Young aspiring devotees, pay attention to the scriptures. Try to understand what you're doing. What is the philosophy? Be honest. Be honest with yourself. Be humble. Try to immerse yourself in a service that will give you life. And pay attention to what's coming from the Guru Varga. See to it that your faith is sincere.
Yeah.